The club that seems to have been scrambling the most over the last week or so will possibly surprise people.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hola, bienvenido a the planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Search.
Bienvenido al planeta FPL, el mundo donde todo gira en torno
de Fantasy Premier League.
O mi nombre es James.
Bom dia, todo bien.
See, I've learned more than you.
For everybody that's thinking what's going on, no, we will continue the rest of this podcast in English, James. I've had gaps where I've been on holiday and missed shows and what have you. I think this gap is the most I've missed podcasting in any time off I've had ever.
That's
I really feel like this has been it. And with the Euros going on and the world burning, and yeah, it just feels like there's a lot been going on in the last 10 days while I've been away that I'm like, oh, I wish
I could have spoken about that. All right, well, look,
but
before we...
Honestly, I'm glad to be back. Glad to be back.
Before we talk what we're going to talk about on today's podcast, do tell everyone how you are, mate.
Yeah, really well. Honestly, really well. I arrived in Portugal yesterday. It was a solid 10, 11-day journey down. And I drove, right, from London to where I am now, which is in the Algarve, Lagos. 1,629 miles. Which is 2,622 kilometers, because now that I'm in Europe, I've got to deal with the metric system, James. Trip went really well, smooth, no issues. Kids had a good time. It was our summer holiday. The drive down through France and Spain was basically our summer holiday. Now we've arrived, feel genuinely recharged, refreshed, just, yeah, ready to go. Ready to go. I'm feeling really good. Honestly.
Good. When you
we're
said
going to
you
talk more about it on the Patreon pod a bit later and go into a little bit more detail about it. Looking forward to that as well.
When you said you've got to deal with the metric system, what's that? Have you amortized it over 5 years or?
Yeah, exactly that, right, James? And don't worry, there's still amortization. There's still accounting loopholes and techniques that we can use. We can play around with dates and times and so on and so on. Amortization might be something that might bleed into a conversation that we're having today, because straight back into it and almost kind of sort of straight back into our money in football, James.
Yeah, I thought first pod back, what would you want? You'd either want to talk about the football, or you'd want to talk about the money aspect of what's happening. So you've ended up with the money. I gave everyone two choices on Twitter yesterday. I had to talk about the quality of the Euros, where we've actually been enjoying it, the 2014 format. Me and Clayton have touched on certain aspects of that on other podcasts. But I think we was always likely to, if we weren't doing it this week, we were going to end up doing it next week. The PSR swap deals, as I'd like to call them. Everybody is aware that there's some deals going on here which just don't look quite right. And they are between Premier League clubs. And I suggested in May that it would probably be business like this. And so it has turned out. So we're going to be discussing these deals, how fishy, unfishy they may be.
So obviously we're into the 4th of July as it stands, and a lot of people have been like, what's the Russian scramble for getting deals done early in the transfer window? Primarily because obviously June is generally a quieter month when teams are shut down after the season ends. Not only that, every other year, you've generally got an international tournament. So kind of players are away with their national teams. Right now, we've got Copa America's still been going on, and obviously the Euros that we're quite well aware of. So players being away can make it a little bit more difficult to get deals done. But this kind of increase in activity early in the transfer window is very heavily linked to the profit and sustainability rules for the Premier League and PSR, which runs from a 1st of July to a 30th of June period. Hence, if you want to do any business for the financial year that's just gone, it kind of sort of needed to be done in principle by the 30th of June. That doesn't mean that actually the players needed to be signed, sealed, delivered by the 30th of June, but at least it's kind of sort of that paperwork's in type situation, or
agreement.
The deal note on transfer deadline day and that kind of thing. And so the 30th of June, whilst it's not any sort of official deadline for transfers has become a date that a lot of clubs have had to work towards to get themselves within the PSR rules for the previous 3 years by that date, by midnight. And this year, I say unfortunately, because yeah, definitely it's unfortunately, it fell on a Sunday, right? And that's a dog's day to have a deadline for.
Yeah, but I mean, it just shows there was deals happening on Sunday.
Yeah.
Or at least agreements being put in place on Sunday. These clubs who were, let's say, at jeopardy were trying to put deals in place on Sunday. PSR, just for clarity, is profit sustainability reporting. Essentially, each Premier League club within a three-year period can have losses up to £105 million. There are certain aspects excluded off that, like money put into
stadiums,
training,
youth teams,
you know, new training
football,
centre, whatever.
Stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in terms of the men's football team, that's what you're allowed, is £105 million loss. And we did a podcast, I think in April, Suj, on Patreon, and we identified seven clubs that would be of real concern. Most people already knew, so like Chelsea and Everton and Nottingham Forest were obvious ones. But also we'd identified Aston Villa and Newcastle were sailing pretty close to the edge. And we also said that Leicester and Leeds also would probably need to make a sale or two before the June 30th deadline. It's worth saying, perfect example of Leicester making a sale that will fall into their end of last year accounts up to June 30th. Keenan Dewsbury Hall was announced as a Chelsea player on Tuesday, yep, on July the 2nd, but that will almost certainly go into Leicester's accounts for last year rather than this year. So the deals didn't have to be done by June 30th. Moussa Niakate, I don't think, has officially signed for Leon yet from Nottingham Forest, but it's all agreed. He put out a statement thanking Forest yesterday. That's going to go on last year's accounts. So it wasn't like an actual August 31st hard deadline, because you don't need to deal with the Premier League. It's transfers for accounting purposes, so there is a little bit of leeway, a couple of days, as long as you can give proof of the deals were in place, essentially, on the Sunday, the 30th.
Correct.
Some of these deals have raised eyebrows because there have been plenty of swaps involved in them. Aston Villa decided not to only just restrict themselves just to even their own mates within the Premier League. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Douglas Luiz gone to Juventus. Two players back in return, Enzo Barrenechea and Samuel Illing Jr. Villa have also sold Amari Kellyman to Chelsea and had Ian Mattson come back the other way. Villa have also sold Tim Robinham to Everton and bought Lewis Dobbin from Everton. Those transfers, those two are both £9 million exactly as well. Keenan Dewsbury Hall's obviously gone from Leicester to Chelsea. I think it's Ryan Goulding, we think he's going to go from Chelsea to Leicester as possibly part of that as well. Quite a small sum of money, but a little bit more of, yeah, we'll take one of your players as well. Nottingham Forest have taken Elliot Anderson from Newcastle. And in return, they're getting Vlachodimos Pliers, which is one of your favourite goalkeepers.
Yeah.
A very, very strange deal, that one. I think Newcastle were given a choice of players to take, and that's the player they decided to take.
Yeah.
Archie Gray of Leeds, as says, obviously joined Tottenham. And as part of that, Joe Rodon has gone to Leeds in exchange. Some of these valuations are obviously very different. And there are obviously been deals done with other clubs as well to raise money for PSR, such as Newcastle selling Jukub Minta to Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yep. Yeah,
these,
I think
these swap ones cause a little bit of, okay, you're fudging the books here, aren't you? Particularly with the young players, I think people are concerned about.
There is concern around the valuation. I don't think there's anything crazy in any of these valuations, but
no.
I suppose for people who might be kind of curious, James, let's just explain it a little bit. Because take the Everton and Villa deal where it's 9 million going each way. So you're trying to show profitability on your books, and people might be like, well, if you're buying a player for 9 million and you're selling a player for 9 million, how does that work in terms of increasing your profitability? But what people need to understand is that A word again, James, go on, amortization.
Yeah, they both win.
Obviously, this was a big deal with Chelsea and everybody will know about it. And UEFA, was it UEFA or FIFA that set the 5-year rule? I think it's UEFA, isn't it? That you can only maximize over 5 years.
I think it was originally a UEFA rule that the Premier League.
Yeah.
A lot of the Premier League rulings have followed on from UEFA guidelines. Yeah. I mean, it's worth saying at this juncture as well, PSI is going to end at the end of next season and will be something else, but it's still relevant for the next 12-month period.
Correct. So in essence, and what you'll notice, which is quite relevant with a lot of players that have been sold, when you sell a player, whatever your profit on that player is, it can go onto your profitability straight away. And when you have players that are homegrown, the likes of Lewis Dobbin or Kelly Mern or any of these players, 100% of that value is going straight onto your profitability because you've brought them through your youth team. I think Chelsea last year when they sold Mason Mount, for example, you've got 55 million going straight onto your profitability at the bottom line. If you then go and spend 55 million on a player, you're allowed to spread that over 5 years, assuming the contract of the player is 5 years. So all that's coming out of your outgoings is that divided by five, which is 11 million. So you've now added for this year, 44 million, doing my maths there, James, 44 million onto your profitability. So the deal between Villa and Everton, for example, both clubs are putting all of the sale straight into their profitability, but only a percentage of the purchase into their profitability. And that's why they're allowed to do that. Because for a lot of people would be thinking, well, it's just one in, one out, surely. Or you're spending the same amount as you're getting. How does that work? It's because you're allowed to spread the cost of purchases.
Correct. And in the case of, let's use the Aurobenham and Dobbin, which is kind of the easiest example because it's very similar amount of money. So in the case of Villa and Everton, because it's a player who's come through the youth system, they can bank it as 100%, all that 9 million inward, straight away, straight back the accounts. Whereas in the buying, you're like, what, 1.8 million, I think, per year spread over five? Yeah. That sounds about right.
I do think it's linked to the length of contract.
But it's not
again,
even.
So
it's not
if you
even,
give a three, if you give a player a 3 year contract, you can spread over 3 years. You can't spread over five. But
in that example, let's say so. Rogbenham's gone to Everton, right? So Villa booked the 9 million. In the case where they've bought Dobbin, it doesn't even mean that 1.8 million, i.e., divided by five, goes onto the account there straight away because the length of time he's actually been there. For it's going to be worth like a couple of thousand if you're spreading it from the moment that he signs.
Yep.
It's nothing. So you're near enough putting for a deal like this, you're near enough putting the 100% of money inward and there isn't actually any outgoing spend now.
Yep.
Basically. Yep.
And that's how clubs are using it right now. And we knew that Everton, Villa, Newcastle, Chelsea, Forest, Leicester, Leeds, like you mentioned, we're in this situation. Leeds obviously have made a big sale to your club, James, the best part of £40 million and what have you. I mean, when I saw the price for Keenan Dewsbury Hall, my first instinct on that was probably a bit low.
In comparison to some of the others, yeah, but Leicester were more desperate.
Yeah, and
it butts into a corner.
It just smelt very Danny Drinkwater-ish to me in terms of a transfer because I don't see where Keenan Dewsbury Hall goes and develops as a player. I think Keenan Dewsbury Hall is a much better player than Danny Drinkwater, probably will develop to be. But you're just going there to be another number. But 30 million felt particularly low in terms of a transfer valuation. But when you look at how they're manipulating the numbers and who's going which way and which way in and which way out, maybe it's a bit more, but it comes out in the wash slightly differently.
I mean, Chelsea's dealings is a whole other podcast and we've been down this route before. I think it's really important to say at this point, no one is accusing any of these clubs of cheating.
No, they're working within the rules.
Correct. Yeah.
Working within the rules.
And none of these clubs are likely to get done. There is a power of the Premier League. Let's give you an example. Let's use the Amari Kellyman, Ian Mattson deal. So Chelsea have bought Kellyman, who I think has played like 60 Premier League minutes or so, but is extremely highly rated. They bought him for 19 million, I think.
Correct.
And in return, Mattson's gone to Villa for nearly double that amount. Now, in Mattson's case, had a really good season at Burnley in the Championship. He's obviously ended up going on loan to Borussia Dortmund playing in a Champions League final. Okay. Both of these players still have room to improve in their careers, particularly obviously in Kellyman's case. What the Premier League will do and they wrote to all the clubs in the week leading up to the June 30th deadline to remind them of their responsibilities. A bit like with sponsorship deals at the moment, the Premier League will check that these transfers are for fair market value. However, quite how the Premier League could come to the conclusion that, oh, Chelsea and Villa have fudged this with, say, the Kellyman deal. I don't know how you can come to, for a player who's, who you're basically, you're buying the potential, aren't you? You're not even buying a player. You're buying the potential of what he could be. And if he becomes even a stand, just a standard average Premier League player at Chelsea, Chelsea are going to at least get their money back, aren't they?
What did they pay for Chukwuemeka? Similar, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, Chukwuemeka.
So again, you've got a case study of a player, similar age, similar profile. I mean, he played more minutes in the league, granted, than Kellyman had. But you can argue the case with the, you can always find the transfer that maybe is a, well, this went for this, and this went for this, and then what's the wiggle room and that kind of thing.
If the Premier League deemed that Chelsea and Villa had kind of falsified the amount, if you will, the Premier League has the power to give Chelsea their transfer feedback for Kellyman. Technically, that's the ruling. And I don't know if it would then go to a tribunal.
What would happen to the player?
What the fee would be. I don't know the answer to that. But that's in the laws that the Premier League have that power. They're not going to do that, mate.
No. Absolutely not. There is grey areas here, but I don't think that this is the worst manipulation of PSR that's going on out there. Like, in terms of what we've discussed with the sponsorship deals and that kind of thing, I think that's far more a serious manipulation of what's going on with PSR.
It's a manipulation because the clubs are helping each other quite clearly, but not cheating. They are working within the rules. If it had been 100 million for Kellyman, then I think we all look round and go, hang on a minute. And even that, you got 19 million is a lot. But then within that, you said Dewsbury Hall, 30 million feels like quite cheap. I think a few people might be raise their eyebrows and say Elliot Anderson going to Nottingham Forest, 35 million. Look at what my club's just paid for Archie Gray, 40 million. Huge. Actually, one of the big things with this is the inflation of transfer costs makes this really difficult to even prove because clubs are inflating the market, right? Yep. You even had that with, say, the transfer deals from Saudi Arabia over the last couple of years. The price of players going up. We know it. One of the big gripes with PSR is, right, well, if you're buying an Archie Gray or an Elliot Anderson for 35, 40 million, how do you expect us to stay within 105 million over 3 years? And that's part why this is going to change. Because although the cost of player salaries, transfer fees, etc. has gone up, this 105 million over the three-year period, which, remember, the 20 clubs, or at least 14 of them, agreed to, in principle, to abide by, obviously needs moving.
Yeah, and I do get that, but I don't think it's a major problem, because I've seen this argued before that, well, as transfer fees go up, so should the amount that you're allowed to lose. Look, there is inflation. There's money inflation, right? We know that it's been right for the last couple of years. Should it go up by 5 or 10% every year? Sure. But the argument that buying players has become more expensive, well, selling players should be more. Like, if you're paying more for your players, you should be getting more, and therefore it should balance out that what's left in the middle should be about the same, in line with inflation. If it was to go up by, let's say, 5 million per season, that's about 5%, not exact maths, I would say, fine, go from 105 to 110 to 105 to maybe 120. But I don't think it's a case of it needs to go from 105 to 150 or something along those lines, because that's just allowing clubs to get down a hole that doesn't exist. It's about the sustainability part of this was the original reason it was introduced, not the profit part. Like, you don't want to see the more berries and those kind of stories existing. That's why it's there. And allowing clubs to lose more money doesn't create more sustainability.
And although Everton fans will hate a lot of the restrictions they've been under, it's probably stopped them going through a never-ending black hole, actually, in terms of the amount of spending they probably would have kept making.
What year are we in, James? You said 5 years of hurt. What's this, the end of year three now?
I think so. I mean, it's worth saying Everton have got a new takeover happening, aren't they? I don't know if it's quite been ratified yet, but I think it is. This consortium has been at Roma, Americans. It sounds pretty positive for Everton, actually. I think we're about halfway through what I said, the 5 years of pain for Everton. There will be a couple more.
Yep.
I think one of the things people want to know is, like, so what happens now? Are these clubs, are these seven clubs, if you will, if we throw Leeds in there as well, have they beat the PSR regulations? The answer is we don't know. And we're not going to find out.
Who knows?
We're not going to find out for a while. So what will happen now is they'll obviously file their accounts, etc., and they've got till the end of the financial end of the calendar year, I think, Serge, to submit everything. That was originally a date that was originally March, but has been brought forward. That's to make sure that punishments can be given out in the same season. So when we hit January next year, it might well be Club X, yeah, you're charged. Points deductions come in, and we may well be going through the same shit we went through last year with Everton and Nottingham Forest. There's one club that I think is likely to get a points deduction soon. That's an exception to that, and I think that's Leicester. And that's because Leicester have a charge against them from the year that they got relegated.
Yeah, 22-23.
So we're not quite sure in terms of the timeline, but there's every chance that Leicester might start the season with a points deduction, and then there might be another one later in the season if they've not beat the reporting on this one. We think, all the clubs think that they beat it, but there'll be things that Everton thought they beat it, right? But then the Premier League looked at the accounts and went, no, actually, you can't put this here for this. But we think all the clubs of the seven clubs have all beat it and think they will be under the threshold for this three-year period and therefore shouldn't get points deductions. One of the things that's really interesting that's come out from this weekend is that the club that seems to have been scrambling the most over the last week or so will possibly surprise people. We think it's
the
been
richest.
It's been
the
Newcastle.
Richest in the world, so they say, James. The richest in the world.
We think, yeah. It's being reported as a really good piece on The Athletic, which is a long read. Essentially, on Saturday, Newcastle were looking at a 50 million black hole, basically, in their accounts and had to find that money. It's worth saying they had kind of deals lined up. So Minta, Newcastle had accepted a bid from Lyon for 40 million, but he didn't want to go there. So Newcastle were looking to get that value of money from other clubs within the Premier League. They've obviously had to accept something less from Brighton eventually. And obviously the Elliot Anderson deal has helped. There was even concern, though, that they were still going to be quite close. Ironically, we think the compensation that Manchester United are going to pay Newcastle for Dan Ashworth and that deal now going through as United's new technical director or whatever he's going to be is what's going to put them over the line. Ironically.
Yeah, I was really shocked when the news came out, kind of like Liverpool's interest in Anthony Gordon. I was like, well, he's only just signed. He's had a great season. They're trying to build moving forward. Like, he's one of the key stars and key players.
It's believed,
all of a sudden,
that report suggests that Newcastle floated the idea to Liverpool, not the other way round, and Newcastle were potentially looking at doing something with Liverpool that might have involved someone like Jarrell Quansah, a good young player. Liverpool could book some money at the same time, etc. And that article does actually say there is a little bit of concern that Anthony Gordon might have had his head turned, also thinking, well, why are you offering me? And supposedly, despite the fact he was at Everton, we think he's a Liverpool fan. So that might be something to keep an eye on that might well get revisited after England go out to the US. But Newcastle do not need to sell now. That's very important. So Newcastle now, it's not a case of, oh, Newcastle are still really restricted. Newcastle are now in a position where they can spend. They've got a new deal with Adidas, which kicks into play this year. They've obviously got new endorsement deals from elsewhere that kick into play. They can go and spend now. Not to what they want to go and spend, but they're not. They haven't got their hands tied like Everton had their hands tied. No. It's worth saying. Yeah. So if Newcastle suddenly buy a player next week for 50 million, you go, hang on, I thought they were in trouble. It's different. They can now do it.
I did kind of sort of look at it, and one thing you mentioned at the start of the show was that these clubs are helping each other out, right? So there's a lot of collaboration in what's going on.
And I don't
blame
them for
that. But in terms of manipulation, like, people were against Newcastle spending money with the way that they, some of the votes that happened in terms of the fair market deals and all that kind of stuff, associated party transactions. And it got the dark side of my mind thinking, James, so you're Liverpool. You know that Newcastle are a big threat.
Can I not be?
Okay. You're Tottenham. No. Okay, you're Tottenham.
I had a chance to win some trophies
there. They're ahead of you right now. We've got to use the Liverpool Newcastle analogy, right?
Okay.
Because Newcastle haven't quite broken into that title challenging group yet, but they are definitely an up and coming threat over the coming seasons. You know that they have a PSR issue. All right, mate, don't worry. I will buy Anthony Gordon from you for £75 million. You're sitting there in the office at Newcastle thinking, great, that solves my PSR situation. I'm good with that. Let's get that deal over the line and we're happy. 2nd of July, Liverpool say, actually, do you know what? We've changed our minds. We're not going to do this deal anymore. Sorry, see you later. What are Newcastle left with? A big problem. Now, what's happened with the clubs, like you mentioned, they've been collaborative. So I don't see there any reason for them to operate in this manner, because there you never know when Liverpool might need a favour off Newcastle or vice versa. But it did get me thinking, right, the potential for manipulation of lastminute.com, lowballing or
but that's
that
part
is
why
huge.
I think they've done the deals with each other with respect. These Villa,
that's
Chelsea, Villa,
true.
Everton
I didn't
swap
put it
deals
in that context, but you're right, that's a very good point, because they both need their back scratched.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
that exactly that
you're open
so
to
Forest,
someone screwing you over.
So Forest supposedly have given Newcastle obviously a decent sum for Anderson, which I think is fine, by the way. I think he'll be a first team player for Forest. I think he's a very good footballer, so I don't have a question mark.
Yeah, I
on
think
that.
They were sad to lose him,
but it sounds like Forest gave Newcastle the choice of a few players, say, like, look, these players are available, you as part of this you're going to need to take one. That's what it sounds like. And I find the decision that they've decided on Vlachodimos slightly surprising, but fine. And actually, the transfer fee there isn't a problem. It's a Greek international, despite whatever you thought about his form. He's played plenty in the Champions League. There's no question marks on that Anderson Vlachodimos deal. There was no question on the money. The money looks absolutely fine to me. It's just the Vlachodimos move looks quite strange. I don't know why Newcastle, that's the player that they chose, they wanted. Yeah. But there's obviously clubs who have been looking to take advantage. How many times have you heard Conor Gallagher be linked with Tottenham over the last year, basically?
Well, just linked with being sold. And Breuer linked with being sold. And
it's worth saying, by the way, Conor Gallagher might still be sold by Chelsea this winter. That doesn't mean it's over, because Conor Gallagher's got now less than a year left on his contract. So the way Chelsea are working, if they don't get an agreement with him in the next 6 weeks or so, they may well force him to go somewhere else. But take Tottenham, right?
They can't force him.
Okay, they can't force him.
This is the part of the problem with your guy from Minte or what have you. It can be forced to go to Lyon.
No, but it can make his life uncomfortable.
If you're Conor Gallagher, you ride that a season, you're going to get... Ben Johnson left West Ham. He's picked up a 7-figure signing on fee and a £60,000 a week contract at Ipswich. That's good money. And the reason they're doing that is because they don't have to give us anything. Conor Gallagher will get a very healthy signing on bonus and a very healthy contract if he rides out a year of pain.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm sure there was a suggestion that Minter was told, if you stay here, you're going to play for the under-21s. Well, it's just not as a threat, just like, look, this is what your situation is going to be, so it'll be in your benefit to move. That would be more difficult to do with a player like Gallagher. So worth just cutting in and saying as well about these moves, like I've stressed several times, it makes me feel uncomfortable that these young players are moving. It feels like they're being farmed around. I think that Minter example is particularly one that feels a little bit uneasy. But he's joining a great football club in Brighton. And he'll get very well looked after, and I'm sure we'll be looking at him quite a bit during the season. But it's worth saying as well, as much as you can say, oh, they're being farmed about, these kids are getting well paid for these moves.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're all going to be on increased salaries, exactly what you said, signing on fees, the sort of shit that can get amortised, etc. They're all going to be earning better salaries and might help them with their lifestyle. I think a lot of us are just concerned about what happens to their careers. You know, Kellyman is treading the same path as Chukwuemeka. There's been speculation that Chukwuemeka might be going to Italy. Like, I don't like that. When I saw him play for England under-19s, I thought this guy's going to be boss in a few years. So, you know, Chelsea have done that. And okay, now we've got to move him on. I'm not suggesting they're going to do that, but it has been rumoured.
I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say moving to Italy is a bad thing. No, look, Tomori's gone there and played for AC Milan and done okay.
If Gareth Southgate's the national manager, as many Tomori fans will point out to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't profess to have seen any of Tomori, so I don't know. But I just don't think that moving overseas is a bad thing for young British players.
I'm not
at
he,
all anymore.
He might want to do it, but I think when he signed for Chelsea, he didn't think, oh, okay, in 2 years I'm going to end up in Milan.
I'm going to be moving on, yeah.
It's probably not what was in his idea.
Yeah, but also you're looking at what Chelsea are doing in the transfer window and signing back anybody and everybody. How are you going to break into that? Look what's ahead of you, because the likes of Madueke and Cole Palmer and all these guys have just come in ahead of him. He's fourth, fifth on the list of choices and options.
This June 30th deadline is basically like a new transfer window deadline. I was going to use an example of
four
Tottenham.
Clubs under the PSR cloud,
yeah,
for sure.
Basically.
For sure.
If you look at Tottenham over the last 3 years, I've already mentioned in relation to, say, Gallagher, and I think there probably was talks, but it probably went a bit cold once the interest with Archie Gray stepped up. Over the last 3 years,
yeah. And Tottenham, Chelsea probably weren't desperate anymore, right?
Tottenham, who don't spend like some of the other big six, are looking to exploit loopholes for their own benefit with their own spending, right? Over the last 3 years, Tottenham have bought Richarlison from Everton on July the 1st, James Maddison last year on June the 28th, and Archie Gray this year on July the 2nd, and all from three clubs who fall into these seven that we were concerned about.
I can see the comments on YouTube blowing up now, James, with that statement. Tottenham don't spend like the big six. You know what's going to be in there, don't you? All of this.
Someone is going to point out.
£232 million.
Someone's going to.
The comments are blowing up.
Someone's going to point
it out. In the comments on YouTube. It only helps the algorithm and makes more people view our stuff.
I'll happily point out that Tottenham have had the highest turnover of any club in terms of expenditure since Ange Postecoglou took over. But it's easy to forget you've got Harry Kane money incoming and stuff
stadium,
as well.
Mate.
Let's do net spend, kids. Let's do net spend.
Yeah, of course.
I think in closure, the clubs haven't broken any rules. I mean, it's really important to say, but we all feel a bit uncomfortable about it. I think we all feel uncomfortable with the idea that that the quickest way for these clubs to get around these financial rulings is to sell their young, bright players. Doesn't make people feel comfortable. And again, to clarify, a lot of these players are obviously going to be compensated very well from the salaries that they're going to be earning, etc. But it doesn't feel right. It feels uncomfortable.
That's what
these clubs are having to do.
Like, yes, from a neutral point of view, when you look at other clubs doing it, but I mean, your club, the youth team had a very good season. My clubs have been building up youth squads for some time and doing really well. You want to see your youth team players make it and come through and represent your club. It's not just about the financial side that makes you uncomfortable. You want to see your homegrown talent represent your club and get a chance. And
I think in a year's time, we'll sit down and we'll look at a club like Villa. Remember when Southampton sold all them players? And you look back on the team Southampton could have had if they hadn't sold Van Dijk, Mane, all these players. Unbelievable team they could have had. I think in a year or two, we're going to look back, particularly at Aston Villa.
And Ramsey's and Chukwuemeka, oh my God, this
team that Villa could have had, it all come out of their academy. And one of the brightest young teams. And a lot of these guys are going to go and have great careers. And it doesn't look like any of them are going to do it at Villa. I think it's a little bit sad. I'm not necessarily even blaming Villa. Villa weren't helped by this year, particularly obviously the money they received from Jack Grealish falling off. That they then kind of spent. The fact that they qualified for the Champions League, you don't see any of that money till next year. So it doesn't do you any benefit for this year's accounts just gone.
Yeah, but the whole point is the fact that they qualified for the Champions League adds another caveat, James. And is it a problem? Like, however they've managed their transfer business and whatever they've done, the net outcome of where they are, they've just qualified for the Champions League. So it comes back down to, what do you want football to be? Is it all about results, or is there more to it? Is there entertainment involved in it? Is there a community aspect of it? And that's been quite a big part of the conversation around England and the Euros and what have you, is like, are we focusing? Is it a results-based business where win, or is there more to football? Is the entertainment side of it important? Is the other side of it in terms of community and youth and whatever else clubs do and bring to cities and towns important as well? So, because from a Villa point of view, you can argue the case, well, we've done our business in the way we have, and look at us, we're in the Champions League and playing great football.
Wait, if you're separating from the pitch, if you're looking at the finances, there is only one result. If you're working within PSR, you win or you lose.
Right.
And Villa and some of these other clubs have obviously had to do what they've had to do. And listen, players have brought in. Dobbin might go on to be a good player. Ian Mattson has played in the Champions League final. I'm not criticising even the business they've done. Sam Willing Jr., I know I've seen him. He's a talent, a bit raw, but could end up being a really good left winger for Villa. You know, they're also buying young players, it's worth saying as well. But yeah, it's left an uncomfortable feeling. And also it's worth saying, although we're saying these clubs haven't cheated, they also got themselves in enough of a mess where they had to do this. All yep. of them. I have a bit more sympathy with Forest because their financials have had to move considering they were a promoted club. But those who've been around for this whole 3-year period now, I have less sympathy for.
Well, listeners, you know where you will get more information around this as and when it breaks, because we will see and cover the topics as and when clubs start announcing financial results, and potential charges and points deductions might become a thing later on in the season. So hit the notification bell.
I don't want it.
Yeah, I know we don't want it. But we'll be covering it as and when. And
Leicester are getting
it. There's only a season of this to go before it changes to a percentage of your income is allowed around salaries. And we'll be covering that as well. So if you enjoy some of the chats that we have around other topics, which I know a lot of you do, just make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to the show. Anything else to add, James?
I'll be streaming 12 o'clock tomorrow. Euro quarterfinals. So if you've got any questions on PSR, the Euros, the actual transfers, quality of the players, etc., feel free to jump in on that stream and ask there.
Indeed. Looking forward. I mean, what a day of games tomorrow, James. What a day of games.
Refereed by English
Euros,
referees.
I mean, I'll add a slight tangent just on the Euros. I mean, one of the topics we were going to talk about, the football, is the most interesting thing from the last 4 days with a round of 16. Many regular listeners will know my kids don't really care about football, right? They tolerate it as a necessary evil. They watch the England games because I think a lot of people do just out of patriotism rather than really caring about the football. Like my wife does that. They wanted to watch a few of the quarters. They're like, oh, the football's on. Can we sit and watch it, Dad? I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I asked my eldest, what is it? What's changed that you want to sit and watch the football? Do you know his response? I just like to see one team get battered, Dad. I was like, if it's a 4-0, that's what's going to take to get you involved in the football a little bit. Crack on, son. There's obviously not been a glut of goals other than Spain, who were excellent. But yeah.
Father like
it's
son.
It's been really fun to
son
to
like
watch.
Father.
Well, let's see. Listeners, thank you so much for all of your support. It's been great to be back, James. Tomorrow streaming, but we'll be doing the Patreon pod. Stay safe, look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other. Cue music, please. Mad Child.
The Fantasy Football Show.